thinking there's probably quite a few car crashes in 2000 in Japan. But sadly, a man died in that accident that day. When the police came to examine the scene and the body, witnesses say they recognized the car, but the injuries were so severe that they disfigured the body. But somebody thought they recognized the man, a 60-year-old local shipbuilder. His family was contacted, and a brother-in-law came to the scene and said, "Yeah, that's him. That's my brother-in-law." He took the tragic news back to the family, calls were made, and the family quickly gathered that afternoon at the home of the widow. Imagine the scene. They're immersed in mourning, weeping, embracing, sharing memories, making funeral plans. That was a somber day. Again, picture that. If you have ever experienced grief at first hand, you know you're in that place, and it's just everything is just negative, it's bad, it's sad. And then the door swings open, and in walks the 60-year-old shipbuilder, completely and blissfully unaware, home from a hard day's work and wondering why all the relatives are over at his house. Imagine you're in that room. This was not a resurrection, unfortunately for them. It was simply a misidentification. The man that died in the car crash was not the man they thought he was. So the family called the police, told them to start their identification process all over again, because the dead man had just walked into their living room. Picture that. Put yourself in that environment on that day and see the change that would have came over the family, the relatives. Absolute despondency that quickly turning into joy. Sheer adulation for the fact that the man was still alive. In that case, death had not been defeated. It had just been misplaced. Their joy became some other family's sorrow. And the truth be told, that that local shipbuilder will one day succumb to the power of death. But in reference to the Passion of the Christ, which you can see playing behind me, I heard somebody saying this and surprised that the movie was not uplifting, but depressing. A bit like sitting in the house with that Japanese family in their living room when they thought that their father, their husband, their brother, their cousin, whoever he was, had died. But the narrow scope of this film that's playing is Jesus' brutal, lonely march to death. That's what the film is about. That's why it's called The Passion. And is there anybody in the room who's never seen it? And if you think about what this film depicts, and I'm sorry if you have never wanted to see it and that you're feeling as if you're forced to see it now, but it is horrific. But it kind of spares Jesus' blushes a wee bit in this film, because do you think Jesus was wearing a loincloth the whole time? Apparently, the beating was so horrific that when he was on the cross, it was difficult to determine whether he was male or female. That's how severe it was. You don't see that in this, thankfully. It is graphic, but it's not quite as graphic as that. But I want to kind of run you through some of what it was like to be crucified. When Jesus arrived at Golgotha, or the place of the skull, the Bible says that they gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall. And you can see that in Matthew 27. And according to Jewish law, if a man was about to be executed, he could request a narcotic. You're like, what? And it was something that was mixed together with wine, and it would help alleviate the pain of execution. That's what Jesus was offered. Gall was like a special painkiller. It was a drug. And they offered that, and Jesus declined. There was a group of women who, because they mourned regularly, this is one of the things that they did. It was their good deed to help anesthetize the people who were going to be executed. They wanted to eliminate as much pain as was possible. He was offered the anesthetic twice, but Jesus turned down the offer on both occasions and refused to drink it because he knew that he was to fully consume the cup, the suffering, that the Father had given him and that only he could take. And the word crucify, when you think of that, it describes the word historos, which describes an upright pointed stake that was used for the punishment of criminals. Specifically, crucifixion was used for revolutionaries and insurrectionists. And that's how Jesus was viewed. It was always used in connection with public execution. It was a public thing. There would be a crowd. Very much like today, if there is hanging in some of the Middle East countries, do you know, if there's a beheading, there's a crowd. And sometimes determined on who it was, determined how big the crowd was. It was indisputably one of the cruelest and most barbaric forms of execution or punishment in the ancient world. And Josephus, who was the famous Jewish historian, described crucifixion as the most wretched of deaths. And Seneca, who was a Roman writer, wrote that suicide was preferable to crucifixion. Sometimes people were beheaded first and then hung on public display. And among the Jews, they were stoned to death and then hung on a tree. And it tells us in Deuteronomy 21 that, and if a man has committed a sin worthy of death, and he's to be put to death and then hang him on a tree, his body shall not remain all night upon the tree, but that anybody should bury him that day. It was a cursed thing to be hung on a tree. Jesus became a curse among his own people, being hanged on a tree. Jesus was Jewish. But at the time when Jesus was crucified, it was down to the Romans to do it. Because the Romans had taken control of that area, as we know as Palestine. And it was reserved for the most serious offenders. People who had been accused of treason. That's what they were accusing Jesus of. Or somebody had participated or sponsored state terrorism. That's how they viewed him. And because the people in Israel hated the Romans so much, it was a very common occurrence. It happened quite often. And the Romans tried to send a strong signal of fear to those that might be tempted to follow in their steps. But then it was barbaric what they went through. So what has just been shown on the screen, where it shows you Jesus being flogged. And so he received 40 lashes minus one with the sticks. And then he was whipped and scourged. And then you notice at one point where the commanding officer does that to turn them over, to get them on the front. They were trying to make it as difficult as possible. And then you imagine once you get put on that cross. What would happen? You'd be nailed usually through your wrist, so that it wouldn't just tear away from your hand and you would fall off. But you would be there. What would happen is this. Your wrists would dislocate. Your elbows would dislocate. Your shoulders would dislocate. You could no longer use your arms to pull yourself up. Your legs were put at a 45 degree angle like this, and one nail would have been driven through both. And then you would be trying to use the strength of your thighs to push yourself up, because when you're hanging there, you start to become asphyxiated. You die by suffocation. It was gruesome. And as he kept pushing himself up and sliding back down against that wood, there was a reason behind the scourging. It was to maximise the pain. Because his back was raw. And it would be further rubbing. They thought about this far too much. But here's the thing about it. He went through that for us. He went through that. He suffered that pain and that anguish because he loved us that much. I know it's harrowing watching that. It's harrowing, it's difficult, and I do apologise if there are children in the room. It is no my intention to cause upset. But I think it's important that we realise just how much he went through. And I don't think this even comes close. It is hard to watch. It would never be seen as an uplifting movie. And I agree with the people who say that. However, it shows the passion, how much he loved us, that he would give up his life for us. And that song says that you would lay down your life, that we would be set free. How amazing is that? How amazing that somebody would take that. Somebody who'd never sinned, who'd never done anything wrong, would take that upon themselves so you don't have to go through it. That is amazing. Greater love has no man than this, that he laid down his life for his friends. He considers us his friends. We weren't even alive. He done that for the whole humanity. And there is not a person in this room, or in this town, and in this county, in this country, that he didn't do that for. No matter who they are, no matter what they've done, and I mean no matter what they've done. One of the things they also did, and I'm going to finish being descriptive on this, but sometimes, the Romans were great at punishing people. They knew what they were doing. Sometimes, they didn't do this in Jesus' case, they put a wee kind of bench thing so that you could actually lift up and sit on for a bit and get a bit of respite. And I say respite in kind of the least kind of comforting way, because that brought problems of its own. And what that did was it just prolonged the pain. It prolonged the suffering. That's what they did. And then when the Romans came and they saw that you were still alive, this is how sick and twisted they got, that they would break your legs so that you could no longer pull yourself, and then you would die within minutes. Sick, twisted, evil, for a reason, to maximise. And you think the disciples loved this guy? They were convinced Jesus was the Messiah. the one that the prophets had said would come to rescue Israel from the hand of their oppressors and usher in the kingdom of God. Now he's dead. But he hasn't just died, he's been crucified. He's been hung on a tree. And Jews would see, this is a curse that's upon us. There's a curse upon him. We followed him, therefore there's a curse upon us. Now he's dead. Half a day after being arrested, without even speaking it in his own defence, putting up a fight, he's hanging on a cross, buried in a tomb. In the eyes of the disciples, he's failed as a Messiah. Where is he now? Failed as a Messiah, failed his followers. But they ran when he needed them most. Even Peter, who says, where are you going? I want to come and I want to come with you now. He ran. In their eyes, hope went to the grave with him. Their future was lost. Their courage was evaporated. The disciples cower in a locked room by themselves, way beyond mourning. Utter desolation. Then they forgot what Jesus' words were the night of his arrest. When he says, I tell you the truth, you will weep and mourn while the world rejoices. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. A woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come. But when her baby is born, she forgets the anguish because of her joy that a child is born into the world. So with you, now is your time of grief, but I will see you again and you will rejoice and no one will take away your joy. Grief. The movie only gives the briefest glimpse of his resurrection. But in the Bible, it's the crucial event. It's why we celebrate this day. It's the turning point in the lives of those first followers of Jesus. You know, the 12, and then the group of women who faithfully followed him everywhere, even at the cross. We forget that. Women have this history of being incredibly loyal. And if you're a man and you're married and you're here, I'm sure you want to commend your wife for her loyalty. And you see it in history where women have been beaten and abused and the whole thing, and they remain loyal. Why? It's one of the things that women do incredibly well. Incredibly well. And so if you're a woman, I want to commend you for your loyalty, for your staying power. Because I think yous are great. The shipbuilder's family back to Japan must have been overjoyed when he walked in the door. Must have been great. But when the disciples realized that Jesus was alive, they were infused with a joy that, as Jesus said, no one would ever take away. Nobody will ever take that away. And you can look up the crucifixion and the resurrection. Look it up on Google. And some of the top hits that you'll find on it are people that say, how could Jesus have possibly died? I have a question to ask them. How could he possibly not? A man with an experience will always beat somebody with an argument. I'm glad. I don't want to argue. I want to share my experience. I want my mess to be my message. I want your mess to be your message. Because the mess that Jesus went through is his message. And he went through that mess not because of anything that he had done, because of everything that we've done. And he went through that for us. It's just wonderful. Truly, truly wonderful. And do you know what? Jesus can then say with wholehearted honesty and conviction, I am with you always. Always. All the time. I know I say this sometimes, but look up always in the dictionary. All of the time. That's how much he's with us. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. Matthew 28:20, I am with you always, even to the very end of the age. And because Jesus is alive, his followers are not alone. We have this. The Son of God is our partner in life. Every step of the way. Every step. In John 14, verses 18-20, it says, I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. Before long, the world will not see me anymore, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. On that day, you will realize that I am in my Father, and you are in me, and I am in you. He lives in us. Whatever you go through, wherever you go, whatever task God calls you to undertake, whatever trials you have to endure, whatever delights you enjoy or heartbreak that you suffer, because Jesus is alive, he will never at any moment be away from your side. I am always with you to the very end of the age. I will see you again and you will rejoice and no one will take away your joy. No one will take away your joy. That's an amazing thought. In John 11:25-26, Jesus says to Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? This is our conclusion. This is how we conclude this. At his resurrection, Jesus led the way from death to life. And it's not just to life that never ends, but it's the life that's the best life each of us could ever possibly live. So if you're looking for something better in life, if you're like, man, I can't take any more of this same old, same old. It's like Groundhog Day. I can't take this. Choose Jesus. If you've never done that, give him a chance. Because when you think about how much you've tried to run your life, rule your life, be the master of your own destiny, has it worked? Be honest, has it? So if it hasn't, then why not take a chance? Because you've took a chance on other things before. Chicken soup for the woman's soul or whatever you've used. Why not take a chance, as Abba say, on Jesus? And here's the challenge that I gave to some people last year. Give them 6 months. But really, give them 6 months. The whole thing, like, the whole thing in Glasgow, we see the full boona. Give them the lot. Everything. For 6 months, give them it. And you know, after the 6 months, if nothing changes, go back to the way you were before. I challenge you. I never expect to see you going back. That's the truth. John 14 verses 1 to 3. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. And I said this to we were at Topped Mountain this morning. It was much colder than it is in here, let me say. But Jesus rose to the dead to build an eternity for you. He rose from the dead to build an eternity for you. I don't know how you picture eternity. If you view eternity inside this roughly 6.5 foot wooden box, I don't see it like that. I see it as something completely thrilling and exhilarating and joyful and kind of bright and shiny. That's what I see. Use your imagination when you think of these things. He has made a forever home just right for you. But when we say, have you received Jesus? Have you stepped into eternal life? Eternal life's not just for when you're dead. It starts now. I want to live in that today. And you can as well. Because he lives, you can live with him forever in the place of your dreams. Designed for you by the one who designed you before the world began. Because he designed you then. Oh no, John, now you're talking rubbish. No, I'm not. Before your parents even thought you, he had you all planned. He designed you in advance. But there's something else that we miss and we don't notice, because in the Gospel of John, that man who was riding on the horse and separated the chapters and verses made a mistake. He made a gap where there shouldn't be one. That's a true story. A guy done it riding a horse and he inserted the chapters and verses. But in John 13:36 to 14:1, because you know when you finish the chapter, the story doesn't necessarily end there. Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus replied, where I'm going, you cannot follow me, but you will follow later. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I'll lay down my life for you. And Jesus says, will you really lay down your life for me? I tell you the truth, before the cock crows, you will disown me 3 times. Chapter break. We missed it. And it goes on to say, do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. Jesus' promise of beautiful hope comes right on the coattails of his prediction of ugly failure. Let me say this though. Failure isn't who you are. Failure is an event. You're not a failure. You could have failed, but that was an event. It doesn't shape who you are. Jesus could have turned around and went, oh, aye, is that right, Peter? Let's just think about this. My friend, you're going to fail me miserably. Far from being the brave warrior that you envision, you're going to be a coward. No long for now, actually. Intimidated by servant girls into denying that you've ever known me. But don't be troubled. Don't worry about that. Despite all that, I love you. And I'm going to go and I'm going to make a perfect home that we will share forever. You'll disown me, but know this. I will never, ever disown you. And my time must be up. Like Peter, every single one of us has failed. And do you know what? We've all failed Jesus. You think of the time where you've been fearful of people and what people would think. You've lost your nerve or you've misplaced your priorities. And the truth be told, we think we've all disappointed Jesus. But his promises are not based on our perfection, but his victory. That's good, isn't it? It's that good, I'll say it again. His promise is not based on our perfection, but his victory. Gotta love that. Good job, John. Well done. We like that. Through his thanks very much, Willie. Though his suffering and death, through that, Jesus paid the price for our wrongdoing, for mine and for yours. I'm not standing here, I've got it all together. I'm making mistakes. I made some major mistakes yesterday. I won't tell you about them, but I did. We all make mistakes. We all do things that are wrong and or they're no right. But guess what? Right in that, even though I did something that wasn't right, I mean, it's no heinous thing, like, do you know, but it just wasn't the right thing. He still loves me. He thinks I'm amazing. But he thinks you're amazing as well, equally as amazing as he thinks I am. No favourites. He thinks you are just utterly wonderful. Because he defeated the power of sin for you. That's how much he loves you. And then by rising for the dead, he dealt death a fatal blow. He overcame the power of death. No one else has done that. He did. For you. Because he loves you. There were two great human enemies. Sin and the grave, or sin and death. He beat them both. That's a cause for joy in itself. He overcame the power of sin and he overcame the power of death. Through the cross and the resurrection, he beat them both. I'm going to finish with this. Jesus said to Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Does the reality of this affect or influence you? This Resurrection Sunday, does it? What Jesus asked Martha when he says, do you believe this? I'm asking you that question today. Do you believe this? Do you believe Jesus is the resurrection and the life? He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe that? Do you? So, last point. Will the impact of this Resurrection Sunday impact you? Will it get you here? I have a question. Do you know Jesus? Personally? Do you know him? Have you surrendered your life to Christ? Have you embraced the salvation that he fought so hard to achieve for you? That he did that on your behalf. And you know, it becomes yours when you follow Jesus from death to life.